Good Tuesday morning, you're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on Sujello 6090 AM here inside of Montreal. My name is Remy, and on this week's episode, 4489, it is an anniversary review of David Fincher's Seven, celebrating its 30th anniversary from 1995. First, though, is DVD Tuesday for March the 18th. You have Moana 2 arriving out onto a physical release, also streaming onto Disney Plus. You have Angels Fallen Warrior Apiece, which is a fantasy action adventure. That one arrives out onto DVD. You have Spy X Family Code White. That one arrives out onto DVD. The A24 Baby Girl, starring Nicole Kidman and Harris Dickerson, arrives out onto DVD. And finally, The Penguin, the original series, starring Colin Farrell and Christina Milioti, arrives out onto a DVD and digital release. Let us now get to some music to get your morning started here onto a Metal March morning here on CJLO 1690 AM. We're going to hear Hazard with Interdimension off of the album The Third Dimension. We're going to hear Tumbleweed Dealer with the track A Distant Figure in the Fog off of the album Dark Green. And then finally, my program director wouldn't have liked me playing the long-ended 60-minute version, but we're going to hear the short radio-edited version of Iron Butterflies and Agata De Vida. You are tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
Late! Don't you know that I'm loving you? In a garden of Eden, baby. Don't you know that I'll always be true? Oh, won't you come with me? And I'll take my hand. Oh, won't you come with me? And I'll walk this land. Please take my hand. Let me tell you that. Here I go. Don't you know that I'm loving you? In a garden of Eden, baby. Don't you know that I'll always be true? Oh, won't you come with me? And I'll take my hat. Oh, won't you come with me? And we'll walk this line.
The movies with iconic sounds only heard on CJLO 6090 AM here inside of Montreal. We're going to get to some new scores and soundtracks here for At the Movies. I have Zhang Jie-Tu with Bon Appetit off of the Bong Joon-ho film Mickey 17. And then we're going to hear Craig Wedren and Anna Warnocker with the track Queen of Hearts from Yellow Jackets. You are tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds only heard on CJLO 6090 AM here in Montreal.
Thank you.
That was Queen of Hearts from Yellow Jackets, music there composed by Craig Wedren and Anna Warnocker. And you're tuned in listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on Sujelo 1690M here inside Montreal. Before that track, you heard Zhang J2 with Bon Appetit off of Bong Joon-ho's film Mickey 17. Okay, we're going to hear Matt Quayle now with Waltz Number 2. From Mr. Robot, Volume 3. And then I wanted to play this one last week, but we didn't get to it, so we have a bunch of time this week to get to it. We're going to hear Joan Williams with Aunt March's Waltz from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard, Sujelo 1690 AM here in Montreal. Thank you. John Williams there with Aunt Marge's Waltz, and before that you heard Mac Quayle, with Waltz number 2 for Mr. Robot Volume 3. Good morning, you're tuning in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 1690 AM here in Southern Montreal. It is time for your Cinematic Fridays for this Friday, March 21st. Everything is being CGI'd this week. So you have Snow White, which is the live action version of the Disney classic. However, the dwarves inside of this film are all CGI'd, so we'll see how that turns out. And then also you have the Alto Knights with Robert De Niro, and I can see a lot of CGI happening inside that one as well too. Especially even though it's trying to be like a live action film per se. Getting some strong Irishman CGI vibes from the Alto Knights. Anyways, Danny joins me for a review of Seven, celebrating 30 years from 1995. This is our anniversary review. I'll issue this inside of advance, but listener discretion is advised for the following content today because it might not be the content that you want to tune in and listen to about the film Seven that we're talking about today. So I'll play that at the very beginning of the episode.
And might I add, I would also warn anybody who decides to watch the film not to eat anything while they're watching the film.
On to today's episode, Danny joins me for an anniversary review as we take a look at David Fincher's Seven from 1995, turning the big 3-0 this year.
It's pretty intense, that's for sure.
That's for sure. The genre can be described as an American crime thriller. As we stated, the film was directed by David Fincher and written by Andrew Kevin Walker. A little bit of a synopsis here. Set in a rainy, unnamed, crime-ridden city. So it's unnamed, however, principal photography for the film was set inside of Los Angeles, especially the end of the film when they're inside the desert. You can see a little bit of more of Los Angeles, but it's rainy all the time. That's why I thought that it struck me as a city that was like constantly raining. So it could have been like Seattle or could have been Chicago or something like that, or Canadian BC. But more of like Seattle, I would assume, with this. So Seven follows disenchanted, nearly retired detective Lieutenant William Somerset, played by Morgan Freeman, and his newly transferred partner, David Mills, Brad Pitt. This is a type of a new, like an early Brad Pitt role, I would say, too, as they try to stop a serial killer from committing a series of murders based on to the seven deadly sins. Walker's inspiration for this film, for writing this film, was New York City in the 80s. So I don't know if you knew about New York City in the 80s, Danny, but
I have a vague recollection, yes.
Yes, so the rising crime and the drug addiction was not a healthy stamp onto the city, per se. We can talk a little bit about Brad Pitt's character for a few minutes here because I wanted to get into his character a little bit of playing David Mills because for me watching it this time, I felt that this was like an early Brad Pitt and he comes off, well, it's the character that he's playing. So he's like playing the opposite detective Trey Marks Pitt, who's young, short-tempered, idealistic, but that's what gets him into trouble inside the long run with this film.
Yeah, well, Brad Pitt's character, like a lot of his other characters, David Mills is somewhat of a hothead, I'd like to say.
Yeah, he comes off very hot-headed inside of this film. So, on to Monday, the first deadly sin comes in to the precinct, and that one would be gluttony.
Yeah, in this scene, we had seen that a morbidly obese man was force-fed to death. He was fed to the point where his stomach burst.
No, exactly. Yeah, definitely marks the film for the savage nature of the film. I guess that we can issue. So Tuesday would be the second deadly sin. Greed comes in the form of a lawyer that is slain.
As far as we know, the motive behind the murder of this lawyer is this lawyer is he's like Saul from Better Call Saul. He's not a crim he's a criminal lawyer, so to speak.
No, exactly. Who they were going for inspiration for the lawyer per se was famed lawyer Robert Shapiro. That was it. So it was Robert Shapiro who they were drawing like eerie similars to for the lawyer inside of Seven. But then also what happens too onto the Tuesday would be the sloth is another crime that takes place. And then finally, Somerset summarizes to Detective Mills that these murders are based onto the seven deadly sins.
The seven deadly sins being gluttony, greed, sloth, lust, pride, envy, wrath.
So Tracy, played by Gwyneth
Gwyneth
Paltrow,
Paltrow.
who is Mills's wife, invites the boys to dinner at her place to kind of ease the tension, with the case, but also the two detectives as well too. However, she is harboring a secret that she shares with Somerset that she is indeed pregnant with Mills's child, but both Tracy and Somerset have the same idea about the world that they are living in, that the world is a little bit
Unhinged.
too dark and unhinged, too dark and unhinged for anybody to raise a family in. I don't know. What's your thoughts about the world of Seven?
Yeah, that doesn't look like a world you would feel comfortable going out in the streets and walking around the neighborhood. I could say that much. You were categorizing the genre of the film before. You had mentioned it would be considered to be a thriller, and might I add that this movie borderlines on the macabre.
The macabre, that could be its own subgenre of a film, but also religious horror as well too could be a subgenre of the film. So one of the interesting things that Somerset decides to do is check library books based onto the seven deadly sins and who's been checking them out of the library. To this, he has a FBI partner who or FBI liaison friend who he finds a list of the people who've been reading those types of books about the seven deadly sins, and that leaves the detectives to John Doe's apartment.
And might I add that when they ch when they go after John Doe, I personally feel this scene was the best filmed scene within the movie. It was the best performed. I mean,
Yeah, I would say so too. It's really well done. The lighting for it as well too, and how you get into the natural lighting around the end of the chase and it's raining heavy. And then it's the Mills versus Doe at the very end.
yeah, no, and might be going into spoilers here, but Mills was not a happy camper after that altercation.
No, essentially, because they did not apprehend John Doe. And then we get to Saturday, where we get two other crimes that take place, both with lust and pride.
With lust, it was the. As I recall, John Doe, Just like he pulled a Charles Manson here in the respect that he ordered somebody to kill somebody for him. He ordered somebody to kill a prostitute for him.
No, yeah, that's what happens. And then pride is more of the model, I think, who can't live with herself, seeing herself disfigured, that she ends up taking her own life. And then finally, John Doe turns himself in to both Detective Mills and Somerset. And he has a final plan to lead Somerset and Mills to the final crime of envy and wrath. I think that this is where we'll take a small break. And when we come back, we'll discuss Seven, talk about it 30 years, turning 30 years. And of course, too, we'll give it the Metal My Movie segment, too. We'll give it the Metal My Anniversary Movie segment, where we talk a little bit about how it has a little bit of the metal aesthetics, sounds, and a little bit more metal going forward. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 1690 AM here in Santa Monica.
You want to be a champion? Well, let me tell you, people don't want a champion. They want to eat cheeseburgers, play the lotto, and watch television.
Hey, how did you get like this? I want to know.
There wasn't one thing, I can tell you that.
Go on.
I just don't think I can continue to live in a place that embraces and nurtures apathy as if it was a virtue.
You know different. You know better.
I didn't say I was different or better. I'm not. Hell, I sympathize. I sympathize completely. Apathy is a solution.
A film clip opens us back up to our anniversary review of Seven turning 30 this year. Good morning. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. Tuned in with Danny this morning.
Good morning.
So, we get to the final crime of envy and wrath. And I guess that we won't spoil it that much, but because, okay, so listener discretion is advised for the following content onto today's show because we are talking about a heavy film with heavy subject matter. That would be David Fincher's Seven. But also, spoiler alert talk is now in effect. However, we won't get to the real spoiler here. So, what I can say is the film final film's climax is Detective Mills and Somerset being led by John Doe to the crime of envy and wrath. And we think that Somerset and Mills have the upper hand at this point. John Doe is inside of, the car, arrested. He's talking. However, Mills always wants to feel in control, and he feels that he has the upper hand onto John Doe. However, inside the final ending, we know that John Doe has somewhat of a last play or a last card, and that is what's in the box. Or as Brad Pitt says, what's in the box? So yes, without going into spoilers of what's in the box, Danny, was that a shocking moment to you of the box, what's in the box scene, without discussing the contents of the box?
Yes and no. No. I mean, yes, in the respect that I didn't think it would go in a specific direction, so to speak. But no, now at this point, we've gotten more familiar with John Doe. Wasn't surprising he would stoop that low.
Let's talk about the film's legacy all these years later. Seven can be seen as the sleeper hit of 1995. It revitalized Fincher's career. It placed Pitt into more of a serious, dramatic role. So I wasn't with Pitt inside of the film, inside general, that I wasn't saying that he was like really a great actor per se inside of Seven. Right up until the very end, when he's inside the car with John Doe and they're having the back and forth between the both of them. And then the what's in the box scene at the very end is really one of the most iconic Brad Pitt roles, I would say, next to Tyler Durden from Fight Club, both with the surprises that this scene has and who Tyler Durden has inside of Fight Club as well too. The inspiration for Seven includes many films, television, and video games. Video games I put there because I really feel that revisiting it this time around, it strikes me a lot of Heavy Rain, which was a crime thriller video game that's a narrative about a missing person who you're looking for. And the title Heavy Rain, that it's a city that has a lot of rain going for it. Aesthetically, too, inside of Seven, you see the music from Shore and Nine Inch Nails as very metal type music. So, Nine Inch Nails, Closer is played inside of the title cards for it, but also the music from Howard Shore, I feel, has a type of a metal clang to it at certain points too. So the title design was innovative for Seven as well to the credits too for Seven is quite innovative as well too, I would say, and revitalized people or directors putting innovative title cards and credits towards their films.
Going back to Brad Pitt, I have a mixed opinion about Brad Pitt as an actor, but I do feel it was a good, it was a one of his better acting jobs in this film. And as for Morgan Freeman, well, I'm always excited to see any given film with him because he's a great actor. And I also feel it was a great performance on behalf of Gwyneth Paltrow as well.
Twist ending is one of the things that Seven is known for, and it's always talked about, the what's in the box moment at the very end of the film. So I feel that the film has a very metal aesthetic to it too. So we can look at it as the Kodak film stock that could capture the gritty interiors and the deep blacks for the night time exteriors, but also the metal sounds. So that would be Howard Shore's metallic playing to the score, the Nine Inch Nails song Closer for the opening credits. David Fincher would later work with frontman Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails for scores for The Social Network, Gone Girl, just to name a few that David Fincher has worked on too with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But also the sound design too for Seven can be seen as metal, from the rain to the screaming to the barking to the sirens. Inside the last few minutes, let's talk a little bit, or dive a little bit inside the thematics of the film. So there's two thematics. There's apathy and hope, and religion and order. I don't know if you saw those two thematics within the film.
Yeah, no, I most certainly did. Well, with apathy, it was painfully obvious to see because we had somebody in the film who really did not feel guilty at all for what he was doing.
And then there's religion and order. So basically, John Doe uses religion to type as an order to his life.
Well, I was going to say that he made the outrageous claim that he was doing God's work and that he was a chosen one.
No, exactly. Some people have a loose sense of what religion and order comes in. So John Doe is one of those people.
And he, as a matter of fact, well, I did, I mean, I also I forgot to mention the act how I felt about Kevin Spacey's acting job in the film. A really good performance on his part too. He was very convincing as the creepy and disturbed John Doe. The film altogether, it's gonna receive a thumbs up from me even after 30 years. It was really good acting. It was a really interesting story. I felt it was very well produced altogether. And there was the quote that Somerset made at the end that I found very interesting. Well, he quoted Ernest Hemingway, as a matter of fact. He said, "Ernest Hemingway once said, 'The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.' I agree with the second part." And oh, I share that sentiment too because let's not sugarcoat anything. This world is not a fine place. However, yes, it very much so is worth fighting for.
So I guess that Somerset, despite his morbid outlook onto the world and not wanting to raise a kid into the world, and Tracy's aspect of not wanting to raise a kid inside the world too, because it's a bleak, crime-infested world, that there is something worth fighting for with the world at the very end. All right,
It was a very interesting way to end the film.
on to next week's show. I am going to be taking a look at the documentary from HBO Music all about yacht rock, and it's going to receive a Metal My Movie segment here on At the Movies with Iconic Sounds. Thank you for tuning in today, and thank you, Danny, for joining me for this anniversary review.
And well, thank you for having me, Remy. It's always a pleasure.